welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Tuesday, May the 5th. I'm Ken Lauder, and first let's take a look at the weather for eastern Iowa. Today we're expecting a pretty rainy day. There'll be scattered showers pretty much throughout the day, and it's going to be chilly. Winds will be from the northeast at 5 to 15 miles per hour. Cedar Rapids will see a high of only 50 degrees. And will reach 51 in Iowa City, falling to a low this evening of 39 in Cedar Rapids and 40 here in Iowa City. Sunset tonight is at 8:10 p.m., sunrise tomorrow morning at 5:56 a.m. for a total daylight period of 14 hours and 13 minutes. And here's the lead story from the front page of today's paper. It's entitled, Coronavirus Strategy Not Political, Reynolds Says. State reports record number of patients who are hospitalized. This is Dateline Johnston by Erin Murphy of the Gazette staff. As she directs the state's response to the Corona 19 pandemic, Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds says her compass is informed by data and the advice of public health experts in her administration and the federal government, not politics. Reynolds offered that assertion Monday during her daily briefing on the state's response efforts, shortly after she participated in a media conference call hosted by a pair of conservative economic think tanks and featuring fellow Republican governors who, similar to her, have started lessening mitigation requirements in their states. This isn't political, and it shouldn't be for anybody, and I don't believe it is, Reynolds said Monday during her state briefing. It's about trying to do the right thing in an unprecedented time to really manage the health and well-being of Iowans and their livelihood. The conference call was hosted by the conservative think tanks Freedom Works and the Committee to Unleash Prosperity. The latter was founded by former Republican presidential candidate Steve Forbes. Art Laffer, a former economic advisor to Republican President Ronald Reagan, and Stephen Moore, whom President Donald Trump proposed for a Federal Reserve Board seat, but later pulled from consideration. He's a member of Trump's task force to reopen the U.S. economy. The groups on Monday published a report that graded governors for how they have reopened their state's economies amid the COVID-19 pandemic. The report gave 8 of its 9 A grades to Republicans, including Reynolds, and 18 of its 20 D and F grades to Democrats, including the governors of New York and Washington, two of the states hit hardest by the virus. Reynolds has lessened some mitigation requirements in 77 of Iowa's 99 counties where the virus has not been confirmed as widespread. This isn't political. That's one of the reasons I've been able to stand here every day, talk to Iowans about making decisions based on data and metrics, based on the expertise that I have working for the citizens of Iowa in the state and local public health departments, Reynolds said during the state briefing, which was held at the State Emergency Operations Center at Camp Dodge in Johnston. Reynolds said the decisions she has made in an effort to limit the disease's spread, including to cancel the remainder of the school year and order many businesses partially or entirely closed, have been the hardest she's made during her 3 years as governor. We're going to continue to make decisions based on great recommendations from a group of experts that I feel very confident in the information that they're providing me, Reynolds said. Virus-related hospitalizations continue to increase in Iowa, though hospitals report they have ample beds and ventilators available. The Iowa Department of Public Health reported Monday that 389 people in the state were hospitalized with the disease, the highest single-day total since the state began reporting the numbers on April 13. Of those hospitalizations, 91% were reported in the hardest-hit areas of the state, eastern and central Iowa plus Woodbury County, according to state data. One lighter-hit region, however, in the north-central Iowa region that includes Mason City, worsened from a score of 5 to a 7, on the administration's 0 to 12 scale of severity. A public health department spokesman said the rating was driven by the number of people currently hospitalized there, 5, with 3 on ventilators. The scale guides some of the administration's policy-making decisions. The worst areas of Iowa, which remain under tighter restrictions, score a 9 on the scale. The state also confirmed 534 new cases of the virus, with 85% of them coming from the 22 counties where tighter restrictions remain until at least May 15. The daily number of new cases generally has increased over the past week as the state's testing efforts have ramped up, although the latest tally is not a record. The state confirmed 4 additional deaths as a result of COVID-19, the lowest single-day total in nearly 2 weeks. Those deaths were Appanoose County, one person between 61 and 80 years of age, Jasper County, one person between 61 and 80, Poweshiek County, one person 81 or older, and Wapello County, one person between 61 and 80. The death marked the first fatality from the disease reported in Wapello County. Reynolds set a backlog of obtaining results from tests that accumulated over this past week as testing ramped up should be cleared, though her administration for days has declined to say how many results were behind. An Eastern Iowa hospital last week told the Gazette it was taking 5 days to learn of the results. Reynolds also defended her administration's decision to not separately report results from a new statewide testing program from other testing efforts. Iowa's newly expanded virus testing program at testiowa.com was based on a program implemented by the same private healthcare company in Utah. The Salt Lake Tribune reported the Utah program was producing test results that showed positive cases at less than half the rate of other testing programs there. There's no way for the public to compare results from the Test Iowa program to other testing programs because the state does not report the results separately. Reynolds and State Public Health Deputy Director Sarah Reisetter said Monday there's no need to publish the results separately because the tests are being validated by experts at the State Hygienic Lab at the University of Iowa. I've spoken personally with Lab Director Dr. Mike Pantella. He's not going to run testing equipment if he doesn't have confidence in the equipment and its performance, Reisetter said. So there would be no reason to separate out Test Iowa results separate from any other test results because the Test Iowa equipment is going through the exact same kind of validation that all of the other tests are happening there have done. We'll just have to continue to report positive test results regardless of the source as one positive number. The Salt Lake Tribune reported, though, that one of the areas of concern was the company's test kits themselves, not only the equipment being used to run the samples. The newspaper cited concerns among public health experts that the test kits provided by the company required a larger sample than usual from a person to trigger a positive result, raising the possibility that some people could test negative even if they have the disease. Reisetter said that if someone continues to feel ill after being tested, he or she should consult a doctor. Also from the front page of today's Gazette, an outbreak has been confirmed at the 5th Lynn Long-Term Care Facility. Cottage Grove Place, one of the largest senior living centers in Cedar Rapids, now is the site of a COVID-19 outbreak, making it the 5th long-term care facility in the county to experience such an outbreak. As of Monday afternoon, Lynn County public health officials confirmed 5 residents and staff have tested positive for the novel coronavirus at the facility at 2115 First Avenue Southeast. The death of one resident is associated with this outbreak. State public health officials said Monday that 28 long-term care facilities across Iowa have reported an outbreak, which is defined as 3 or more residents testing positive for the virus. Over the weekend, a spokeswoman confirmed for the Gazette that about half the state's coronavirus-related deaths are associated with long-term care facility outbreaks. Last week, Cottage Grove Place Executive Director Mark Bailey told the Gazette that residents and staff within its skilled nursing facility have been infected with the virus. The long-term care facility had implemented daily temperature checks for all residents and restricted staff members from moving to areas of the facility outside their designated work areas. "We're taking very aggressive steps to prevent spread," Bailey said at the time. According to its website, Cottage Grove Place has 52-unit skilled nursing center, 19 assisted living apartments, and 162 apartments for independent living. According to local public health officials, other facilities in Linn County reporting a COVID-19 outbreak include Heritage Specialty Care at 200 Clive Drive Southwest in Cedar Rapids, and it's seen the largest outbreak at a long-term care facility in the state. The facility has had 113 residents and staff test positive. 24 residents have died, while 85 residents and staff have recovered. Living Center West at 1050 4th Avenue Southeast in Cedar Rapids, which is owned by Unity Point Health St. Luke's Hospital, has reported 52 residents and staff have tested positive for the novel coronavirus. 6 deaths have been associated with this outbreak. Manor Care Health Services at 1940 1st Avenue Northeast, also in Cedar Rapids, has had 37 positive tests among residents and staff. 3 residents have died as a result of COVID-19. Linn Manor Care Center at 1140 Elm Drive in Marion has reported 22 residents and staff have tested positive. 3 residents have died. Linn County public health officials declined to say whether there were other long-term care facilities locally that were seeing cases of COVID-19, but did not meet the metrics for an outbreak. Heather Medor, Clinical Services Branch Supervisor at Linn County Public Health, said officials cannot disclose the names of facilities with cases, but added, "We try to intervene as quickly as possible so we can help reduce the burden of infection within that facility." However, with COVID-19, Medor said, public health officials are finding that once they find a case within a facility, it's almost too late. It's already spread to many people. The novel coronavirus is highly transmissible, meaning it easily spreads among individuals. In addition, Medor said it can take up to 2 weeks before infected individuals start to show symptoms. So unfortunately, that virus may have been spreading around long before we start to see any symptoms, she said. Governor Kim Reynolds also discussed the highly transmissible nature of the novel coronavirus during her daily news conference Monday morning. Once the virus is in any facility, congregate setting, or even households where many people work in close proximity or live with each other, it spreads quickly, and it spreads easily, Reynolds said. At the State Emergency Operations Center in Johnston, That's why we're trying to get in front of it by conducting targeted diagnostic and serology testing for employees at businesses and long-term care facilities where the stakes are high. Reynolds said her office was sending strike teams, clinicians from state agencies, including the Iowa Department of Public Health and the Iowa Department of Human Services, to several long-term care facilities and manufacturing facilities across the state to test employees for the virus. This move will help officials be proactive in managing virus activity, she said. Medor and Linn County Public Health do not plan to use the resource, as those strike teams have been aiding counties that do not have as robust public health resources as Linn County. Instead, the county agency is asking any long-term care facility to reach out. Also from the front page of the Gazette, here's a story entitled "Report Paints a Bleak Picture of the Economy." This is by Rod Bosshart of the Gazette Des Moines Bureau. The COVID-19 pandemic is starting to dramatically affect Iowa's economy, according to a new state report issued Monday. The Iowa Department of Revenue's Leading Indicators Index dropped 3% to 103.1 in March, the largest one-month decrease in the two-decade history of the economic measure, and more than 2 times larger than the 1.3% drop in December 2008 amid the Great Recession. While the March numbers were bad, the April report could be worse. Many Iowa businesses were closed starting March 17 under Governor Kim Reynolds' public health emergency proclamations. In 22 counties, those closures and restrictions remain, though starting last Friday, she eased her orders on a limited basis for restaurants, malls, fitness centers, and other businesses in 77 counties. I think you'll see definitely continued weakness in the indicator in April, said Robin Anderson, chief economist and administrator of the Iowa Department of Revenue's Research and Policy Division. We would anticipate, as we get more information, that we'll likely see continued weakness in this indicator. State officials said the monthly Leading Economic Indicators Index was constructed to signal economic turning points. It measures eight categories, including residential building permits, farm crop profits, performance of Iowa-based stocks, and employment and unemployment, among others. But only two of the eight components were positive for March, the number of building permits and a measure of the yields of federal treasury bonds. When looking at longer-term measures, the report found alarming evidence of a coming economic contraction. That concern is triggered when two factors are found in the same six-month period, that the index drops by 2% or more, and that the majority of the components decline. The latest report shows that both are occurring. State revenue analysts said the changes strongly suggest the Iowa economy will weaken through the fourth quarter of fiscal 2020, which the state is in now, and the first quarter of fiscal 2021 beginning July the 1st. One of the positive measures was the number of March residential building permits, but while they were 58.7% above March 2019, they were 4.6% below the historical average for March from 1998 to 2019. Unemployment claims and performance of Iowa stocks, among other components, painted a bleaker picture. Iowa non-farm employment dropped in March for the fourth month in a row. The report suggests that unemployment will continue to weaken over the next 3 to 6 months. The 12-month moving average of weekly unemployment claims increased to 6,113 in March from 2,885 in February. Average monthly claims were up 1,842% from last March and 1,375% above the monthly average. The March average weekly unemployment claims reached 40,835, which is 3.5 times higher than the next highest month of December 2008, according to the report. By the week ending April 4, the number of idled Iowans filing for jobless benefits was a record 64,194, Iowa Workforce Development reported. For the last 2 years, the 12-month moving average of Iowa weekly unemployment insurance claims has been below 3,000, a threshold not crossed during the previous 11 years. The latest government report indicated that the Iowa unemployment rate increased to 3.7% in March from 2.8% in February. The unemployment rate in March only reflects the very beginning of the impact of the substantial increase in unemployment claims we have seen since March 16. However, the more reflective month will be April, said Beth Townsend, director of Iowa Workforce Development. In March, the Iowa Stock Market Index experienced losses in all of the 31 companies measured. While all the stocks in the index took considerable hits, state officials said 13 of them experienced index losses of over 30%. And for the first time in the history of the index, all of the Iowa stocks experienced losses in the same month, as well as the largest one-month decrease ever. One of the unknowns is whether Iowa's economy will see a quick V-shaped recovery, a U-shaped recovery with a longer down cycle before recovery, or a W-shaped double-dip recession, where the economy reopens, but things are forced to shut back down due to a resurgence in COVID-19 activity. Will you see people go back to the restaurants, go back to the mall, that sort of stuff in the month of May? Anderson wondered. And from the editorial page today, we have a guest column by Jerry Vander Sanden. Mr. Vander Sanden is a Linn County attorney. And the editorial is entitled, "Editorial Played Race Card Against police. The recent Gazette staff editorial, A Sickening Top 5 Ranking for Iowa, was a reprehensible attack on our police and a shameful play of the race card. Citing a report by the American Civil Liberties Union showing black Iowans are more likely than white Iowans to be arrested for marijuana possession and to be behind bars, the editorial asserted that the police and Iowa's legal system unfairly targets black people. However, you can't always draw sound conclusions by citing statistics. Bare numbers don't tell the whole story, and there are other factors that account for racial disparities in the justice system. Linn County is one of several jurisdictions in Iowa dealing with a serious gun violence problem. Many of these crimes occur in poor neighborhoods, and the victims are often black. Police concentrate their efforts in these hotspot areas in an effort to combat the violence and get guns off the street. It stands to reason that officers will patrol, stop and frisk and make arrests in the areas where violent crime is reported and the complaints are made. It's not like the police are meandering about the city looking to arrest a certain segment of the population for marijuana charges. When they find marijuana, an arrest is made, regardless of the race of the offender. By the way, a recent list of residents of Linn County, of the Linn County Jail showed 229 people being held. The number of people being held for marijuana possession, zero. To be sure, blacks are overrepresented in Iowa's prisons. They make up about 3.4% of Iowa's population, while accounting for roughly 25% of prison inmates. But do these figures prove the police and the criminal justice system are to blame for the racial imbalance in our prison population? The fallacy in such an argument can be seen when comparing it to a far bigger disparity in our prison population, and that is the gender disparity. There are 9 prisons in Iowa, 8 for men and 1 for women. Of the roughly 8,500 inmates in these prisons, 91% are men, 9% are women. These figures represent an astonishing gender imbalance in our prison system. Does that statistical inequality mean that our justice system is rigged against men while giving women a free pass? No sensible person would cite the gender disparity in our prison population to argue that the criminal justice system is sexist and unfairly targets men. We accept the proposition that men commit crimes at a disproportionate rate relative to their segment of the population. The fact of the matter is that the people in prison are the ones who are committing the crimes. When the ACLU and other anti-police groups rant about disparities in the justice system, they tend to ignore the most troubling inequity in our justice system, and that is the racial disparity in crime victimization. Although black men make up about 6% of our population, they account for nearly half of America's homicide victims. A Bureau of Justice Statistics study of homicides from 1980 to 2008 found that the victimization rate of blacks was 6 times that of whites. This alarming inequity is seldom addressed by those bent on leveling charges of racism against the police and the justice system. The inordinate number of black lives lost to gun violence is tragic and is deserving of a strong police response. Those who live in high crime areas, understandably weary of gun violence, are asking for more policing, not less. Our local law enforcement agencies dedicate themselves to putting an end to the violence and senseless loss of life. Our police officers are not racist, and it was irresponsible for the Gazette to suggest otherwise. It is a worthy endeavor to examine the root causes of crime and to search for solutions. But in the process, let's not unfairly disparage the integrity of the men and women in blue who risk their lives to serve and protect us. And that editorial by Jerry Vander Sanden, the Linn County attorney. We have only one letter to the editor today, and it comes from Sheriff Lonnie Polkrovec of Iowa City. His letter is entitled Kunkel for Johnson Sheriff. I've had the pleasure of serving you as Sheriff of Johnson County for the past 15 years, and the job is not one that I or anyone else should or can take lightly. The office of sheriff requires a balance of both politics and leading a very large law enforcement agency. That means sometimes those two worlds can collide. In these tough situations, it takes someone who believes in their coworkers, trusts their coworkers, and asks them to always perform at a high level. I'm confident that Brad Kunkel is up to the task. The sheriff must also always follow the Constitution and enforce the laws of Iowa. In addition, the sheriff is responsible for the operation and oversight of the county jail. Brad's career experience, including his years working in the jail, are valuable for safe and efficient jail management. The office of sheriff requires a thoughtful approach to what is best for the citizens of Johnson County. I've worked with Kunkel for more than 20 years, and I know he has the temperament, intelligence, and integrity to excel in the office of sheriff. I wholeheartedly believe he is the best person to take the office into the challenging times ahead. Join me and vote for Kunkel on or before June for Johnson County Sheriff. And that letter by Sheriff Lonnie Polkrebeck of Iowa City. And you're listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Tuesday, May the 5th. I'm your reader, Ken Lauder. So let's turn now to today's obituaries. From the obituary page, first from Cedar Rapids, Dorothy Jean Topping lost her battle with COVID-19 on May the 3rd at the Living Center West in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. A private family graveside service is planned for a future date out of respect to the current conditions of the COVID-19 restrictions on gatherings. Thank you to everyone who's reached out with memories and condolences. From Cedar Rapids, Patricia K., also known as Patty Bryant, passed away peacefully at her home on May the 1st. Patty's wish was to be cremated and interred at Sharon Church in Morning Sun. From Marion, Andrew Joseph, also known as Patty Flood, who went to be with the Lord after a long battle with COPD. That was on April the 30th. A private family visitation will be held Tuesday, May the 5th, at the Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Marion, Iowa. Per Andy's wishes, cremation has taken place. A celebration of life, service with funeral mass and military honors, and luncheon are to be planned for this summer. From Cedar Rapids, Judy McConaughey, age 75, died on Sunday at the Living Center West. A celebration of life services with military honors will be live-streamed starting at 11 a.m. Thursday, May the 7th, on Bross Chapel's Facebook page. Family and friends are encouraged to view and leave a condolence for the family during this time. A private family interment will be in Memory Garden Cemetery in Iowa City. The Bross Chapel and the Ava Center in Cedar Rapids is in charge of Judy's arrangements. Also from Cedar Rapids, Patricia Ann Thompson, age 88, passed away Saturday, April 25, at the Winslow House in Marion. A private service will be held Wednesday, May the 6th, at the Cedar Memorial Park Chapel of Memories. Burial will be in Cedar Memorial Park Cemetery. From Cedar Rapids, Russell Angelo, also known as Lolo Porter, age 47, of 2620 33rd Avenue Southwest in Cedar Rapids, died on April 29 at Mercy Medical Center from complications of the coronavirus. A celebration of life for Lolo Porter will be held at a later date. And from Belle Plaine, Suzanne Snyder, a resident of Orchard Ridge Retirement Community of Winchester, Virginia, and a former resident of Belle Plaine, Iowa, died of natural causes on April the 26th. Graveside services held at Oak Hill Cemetery in Belle were held at Oak Hill Cemetery in Belle Plaine. The Hrabek Newhouse Funeral Service was assisting the family. And from Cedar Rapids, Robert L., also known as Bob Bromley, enjoyed a wonderful Christian life until Saturday, May the 2nd, when he entered into eternal rest. Because of state and federal guidance on gatherings as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic, the family will not be having public services at this time. A private family burial will be held at Springdale Cemetery in Peoria, Illinois, and a celebration of life will be held at a later date at Marion Christian Church. From Independence, Layla I. Jones, age 97, died May the 2nd. And from West Branch, David, also known as Dave W. Power, age 66, died unexpectedly at his home on Friday evening, May the 1st. The Power family hopes to host a celebration of Dave's life in August of this year when the COVID-19 virus subsides. The Lensing Funeral and Cremation Service in Iowa City is handling arrangements for Dave. And from Fairfax, Dennis J. Conaway, age 73, died Sunday, May the 3rd, at the Manor Care in Cedar Rapids. Private services will be held with burial in Linwood Cemetery in Cedar Rapids. The Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Cedar Rapids assisted the family with arrangements. From Monticello, Sandra, also known as Sandy Edwards, passed away Sunday, May the 3rd, after an 18-month fight with pancreatic cancer. Funeral services will be held at a later date at Wayne Zion Lutheran Church in rural Monticello. The Getch Funeral Home has taken Sandy and her family into their care. From Chicago, Dorothy Jean Flick of Clinton, Iowa, passed away Tuesday, April 28, at Amita Health Adventist Medical Center in Hinsdale, Illinois, of cardiac arrest from complications of COVID-19. Given the current pandemic, she was cremated by arrangement with Sullivan Funeral Home of Hinsdale. A family interment ceremony will be held subsequently at Fairview Cemetery near Terrell, Iowa. From Marion, Sean Christopher McClintock, age 27, died April 27 while residing in Florida. There will be a small family celebration of life for Sean on Saturday, May the 9th. And from Loudoun, David R. and Vicki Boetcher, B-O-E-T-T-C-H-E-R. David was 63, Vicki L. Boetcher was 61. Of Loudoun passed away Saturday, May the 2nd. Private family services will be held at St. John's United Church of Christ in Clarence, with the Reverend Matt Schneider Adams officiating. Burial will follow at the Loudoun Cemetery. And in other death notices, from Anamosa, Richard J. Albers, age 77, died Saturday, May the 2nd. The Kramer Funeral Home in Monticello is assisting the family. From Cedar Rapids, Linda M. Heyer, age 64, died Saturday, May the 2nd. Iowa Cremation is assisting the family. From Cedar Rapids, Duane Philip Sari, S-A-A-R-I, 63, of Missouri, formerly of Cedar Rapids, died Sunday, April 26. The Cedar Memorial Westside Chapel in Cedar Rapids is assisting the family. From Garrison, Anthony W. Mealhouse, age 65, died Monday, May the 4th. The Phillips Funeral Home in Vinton is assisting the family. From Garrison, Sharon K. Harrelson Valentine, age 54, died Sunday, May the 3rd. The Phillips Funeral Home in Vinton is assisting the family. From Keota, Theola Lyle, age 97, of Williamsburg, formerly of Keota, died Saturday, May the 2nd. The Powell Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Keota is assisting the family. From Marion, Shirley A. Rasmussen, age 80, of Marion, died on Sunday, May the 3rd. The Cedar Memorial Funeral Home in Cedar Rapids is assisting the family. And from Nichols, Marcella Irene Barnhart, age 96, formerly of Nichols, died Friday, May the 1st. The Henderson Barker Funeral Home in West Liberty is assisting the family. From Ocean, Jermaine Beckman, age 87, died Sunday, May the 3rd. The Jameson Schmitz Funeral Home in Olwine is assisting the family. From Strawberry Point, Donald J. Steffen, age 78, died Sunday, May the 3rd. The Kramer Funeral Home in Dyersville is assisting the family. And from Tama, Leonard Johnson, age 89, died Sunday, May the 3rd. The Cruz Phillips Funeral Home in Tama, Toledo is assisting the family. From Tipton, Stephen Matthew Person, age 71, died Sunday, May the 3rd. the Fry Funeral Home in Tipton is assisting the family. From West Branch, Paul H. Sexton, age 88, died Saturday, May the 2nd. The Henderson Barker Funeral Home in West Branch is assisting the family. And from Williamsburg, Julia E. Burstler, age 60, died Saturday, May the 2nd. The Powell Funeral Home in Williamsburg is handling arrangements. And in other deaths, Charlene Orndorff, age 83, of Oskaloosa, formerly of Libertyville, Illinois, died on Saturday, May the 2nd. The Powell Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Kyoto is handling arrangements. The lead story from the sport page today is about Iowa women's basketball. It's from Montezuma and entitled Adding an Athlete. Lisa Bluter couldn't wait to share her excitement. The University of Iowa women's basketball coach had just viewed signee Shatia Wettering in a game last winter. Wettering wasn't what Bluter expected. She was better. We had recruited her as a power forward, Bluter said. But when I saw her last season, I was so excited I called my assistants and said, we have a three here. A three is a small forward. A three can play about anywhere on the floor. Simply put, a three is an athlete, and Wettering absolutely is an athlete. Here's a reminder on Wettering's track and field prowess since her final spring season was canceled due to COVID-19. She finished second, third, and second in the Class 1A state 400-meter dash, including a 57.28 second effort as a junior. That's some serious turnover, especially for a six-footer. Wettering also was fourth in the 200 last year and anchored a pair of relays that placed high. Montezuma was third in the 1A team race that last year, and the Bravettes figured to be the favorite this year before the season was canceled. I miss all the girls. Senior year was my last shot, she said. I try not to think about it too much because it makes me sad. Wettering committed to Iowa during her sophomore season. At the time, the word project seemed applicable. As a freshman, she averaged a modest 7.8 points per game. As a sophomore, 13.5. She was a very raw athlete then, said Bravettes coach Janelle Burgess, who played basketball for Iowa State. She has a lot of tools in her toolkit now. She just has to keep sharpening them. There's no doubt in my mind that Shatia is going to be one of those surprise recruits. She's very athletic, and Iowa does a tremendous job developing kids. Wettering concluded her high school career with 1,558 points. She played in three state tournaments, and her team was 82-16 in the last four seasons. As a senior, she averaged 23.2 points, 6.7 rebounds, and 4.2 assists, and 3.0 steals as the Bravettes went 23-2. The most striking development in Wettering's game comes from the perimeter. In her first three seasons, she shot 23% from three-point range. As a senior, that figure jumped to 37.6%. I realized I should be shooting a lot more, she said. Wettering has continued her shooting regimen. A nearby church parking lot has a hoop. There's a lot of space there, and I pretty much have it to myself, she said. She's taking two online community college classes, public speaking and statistics, and has begun the training regimen sent by Bluter and her staff. I'm running a lot, and I'm doing a lot of upper body strength, Wettering said. The push-ups, I really struggle with that. It's challenging, and I'm glad it is. Iowa's incoming class of 2020 consists of blue-chip guard Caitlin Clark, efficient post Sharon Goodman, combo guard Lauren Jensen, and Wettering. Her role? Athlete, and maybe a surprise. She has good passing skills. She looks sleeker, and her three-point shot has improved a lot, Bluter said. She's going to be a really good small forward for us. Here's your Dear Abby for today. It's entitled Customers Make Life Stressful for Clerk. Dear Abby, I work in the deli department of a grocery store and have been struggling lately. With everything that's going on, people are overwhelmed and have been taking it out on us. I asked one person, how are you doing today? The response I got was, "I'm not interested in conversation. Just feed me." We employees are stressed out about the same feelings everyone else is. We're struggling to get the same products everyone else is searching desperately for. I had to shop at 5 different stores to get what I need and still haven't found many things. Between the stress of the virus and the stress of being treated so rudely, my mental health is running low. I've struggled on and off with depression and anxiety, and many of my coping methods are unavailable due to closures. Could you please remind your readers that we're all in the same boat and direct those of us who are struggling emotionally to resources we can access during this time of panic? That's signed Struggling in Retail. Abri responds, "Dear Struggling, I agree that people react badly when under stress. Consider contacting the therapist you worked with and ask if the person is doing online sessions. If that isn't possible, consider exploring whether there are online support groups for retail workers. If there aren't, consider starting one so you and others can exchange ideas about coping with these stressful circumstances in which we all find ourselves." And here's a story from Cedar Rapids entitled $8.1 million grant coming to Cedar Rapids Transit. It's a story by James Q. Lynch of the Gazette Des Moines Bureau, but at Dateline Cedar Rapids. Until city bus service was suspended due to coronavirus restrictions, ridership in Cedar Rapids was running ahead of the 1.25 million passenger count the transit department recorded last year. We were up a couple of percent, and planning to expand our services, transit manager Brad DeBrower said Monday. An $8.1 million federal grant, part of a $25 billion Congress included for transit systems in the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, also known as the CARES Act, should provide a bridge to resuming a semblance of normal operations when the buses start rolling again. The transit budget for the fiscal year beginning July the 1st is nearly $11 million. For the time being, the city has suspended bus service through May 15, and most of the department's 55 workers, including more than 40 drivers, are on paid administrative leave. The grant money is intended to help cover operations and personnel costs, according to the Federal Department of Transportation. "Our hope is that we'll have a healthy workforce ready to go when operations resume," DeBrower said. So far, he said, the department hasn't had any employees test positive for COVID-19. DeBrower has no idea when operations will resume. Before suspending service on March 25, the city had taken steps to limit social interactions by suspending the collection of fares and asking riders to limit the number of people on a bus to 10 at most. DeBrower expects those policies to continue as service is resumed. "We expect it will take some time before people get more comfortable with being out in public again, so we expect low ridership and low revenue," he said. "The grant will help offset those losses so we can maintain similar level service." With city buses not rolling, Linn County Lifts and Neighborhood Transportation Service at Horizons have been filling the void. Fares for those services have been waived. Another article from Cedar Rapids entitled "Her Sister Was Killed in Cedar Rapids." Now Victoria McDaniel is calling attention to domestic violence. Asia Takara Grice was a free spirit, lively, stubborn, loved, and strong-willed, and she went her own way. Those qualities are some of the reasons people were drawn to her, but those qualities also might have been a factor in her death. Grice's older sister, Victoria McDaniel, of Joliet, Illinois, told the Gazette. Grice, age 25, died of a gunshot wound to her head at 4:40 a.m. Friday at an apartment complex at 1610 30th Street Northwest. She was in her second trimester of pregnancy, court documents show. Keona Smith, 25, a close friend of Grice's, whose apartment is in the complex, also was shot several times and taken to a hospital with serious injuries. Grice's boyfriend, Johnny Osborne IV, age 26, of Cedar Rapids, was arrested a few hours later at the Roadway Inn at 4011 16th Avenue Southwest and faces charges of first-degree murder, non-consensual termination of a pregnancy, attempted murder, and willful injury causing serious injury. Court records indicate Osborne made an initial appearance in Linn County District Court during the weekend where a $3 million cash-only bond was set. Grice's sister said Smith has been letting Grice stay with her for a few weeks since until Grice could get her own place. My heart hurts so bad, said McDaniel, age 27. Asia was so loved. She was the life of the party. She was a tough cookie, and she was going places. He took my best friend. McDaniel said Grice met Osborne in December, and immediately something felt off about him. His energy was off from the beginning, she said, and Asia was different when she was with him. It was like he drained her of her light. Osborne was controlling, jealous, and possessive, McDaniel said, and although her sister would never admit it, McDaniel suspected Osborne was physically abusing her sister. We tried to tell her, McDaniel said. We tried to get her to see she wasn't in a good situation, but she was also so stubborn. She wanted to see the good in people. McDaniel said her sister was just figuring out her direction in life. She was working in assisted living, helping care for older people, and was studying to become a certified nursing assistant. She wanted to be a midwife, McDaniel said. That took us all by surprise, but she had her mind set on that. When she found out she was pregnant, Grice was ecstatic, her sister said. She was over the moon, McDaniel said. She wanted nothing more than to be a mom. In the weeks before her death, McDaniel said her sister was starting to see things a bit more clearly. She had just put down a deposit on her own place, and McDaniel said she was figuring out her next move. I think that's why she's gone, she said. Intimate partner violence affects more than 12 million people each year in the United States, according to the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence. And nearly one-third of the women in Iowa will experience domestic violence at some point in their lives. Data also show intimate partner violence accounts for 15% of all violent crime. Domestic violence is real, McDaniel said. Mental health problems are real. This is no joke, and it's not okay. Just look at what happened to my sister. She never saw it coming. I knew he was bad news, but I never thought he'd put my sister in the dirt. I never thought it would go this far. In sharing her sister's story, McDaniel said she hopes it will encourage women who are in abusive relationships to reach out for help. They need to know that there are people who want to help, she said. They are not alone. My sister was not alone, and there are other women who are going through this right now who don't know there are people out there that want to help. My sister was beautiful, McDaniel continued. She was kind and generous, and she didn't deserve this. And there's a sidebar here entitled To Get Help. If you are in an abusive relationship, you can call these phone numbers for help. The first is the National Domestic Violence Hotline. That's 1-800-799-7233. Next is the Iowa Victim Service Center at 1-800-770-1650, or you can text Iowa Help to 20121. There's the Domestic Violence Intervention Program in Iowa City. The toll-free number is 1-800-373-1043. And finally, the Waypoint in Cedar Rapids. That number is 319-363-2093. Or you can dial toll-free 1-800-208-0388. And from Iowa City, we have a North Liberty man who is running for supervisor in Johnson County. A North Liberty man is seeking a seat on the Johnson County Board of Supervisors. Dean Finney, age 61, is running on the Democratic ballot against incumbents Lisa Green Douglas, Royce Ann Porter, and Rod Sullivan in the June 2 primary election. The board will have three open seats in November. In a news release, Finney said he wants to bring some common sense back to Johnson County government to run smarter government that works for all. I will bring new blood and new ideas to the board, he said. A native of Clear Lake, Finney has lived in Johnson County since 1977, when he was recruited to the University of Iowa wrestling team by Dan Gable. Finney placed third in the 1980 NCAA Division I championships. Finney's career includes owning and operating Advanced Property Management for 23 years and driving a school bus for First Student Incorporated. He said working for First Student got him interested in workers' rights. The union inspired me to be one of the driving forces in the campaign for the workers to organize with the Teamsters, he said. Finney went on to serve as a full-time organizer with the Teamsters for 13 years. I found my calling as an organizer because I was able to help others stand up for themselves and really change their lives, he said. Johnson County supervisors earned $81,864 in fiscal 2020. The next general election is November the 3rd. And from Iowa City, an arrest was made in an Iowa City homicide investigation. An arrest has been made in connection with an Iowa City homicide. Duro J. A. Rosa, age 22, of Iowa City, faces one count of first-degree murder in the April shooting death of 21-year-old Kajuan Winters. Police said they still are searching for a person of interest in the case. Reginald, also known as Reggie Little, age 44. First responders were called to 1960 Broadway Street, Rosa's residence, at 9:55 a.m. April 20 for a report of a disturbance, according to police criminal complaint. Police said gunshots could be heard on the call. Police found Winters suffering from gunshot wounds, and he later died at the scene. Police said Rosa and a woman also were at the residence. They gave police a description of the shooter and said the shooter had been arguing with Winters before they heard shots. The criminal complaint did not identify the person accused of being the shooter. However, cell phone records show Rosa had been in contact with the shooter about going into the apartment just before shots were fired. In a subsequent interview with police, Rosa admitted that he and the shooter plotted to rob Winters. Rosa told police he did not intend for Winters to be fatally shot. The case has spurred additional arrests. Tyrus D. Winters, age 41, and Tony M. Watkins, age 39, were arrested on attempted murder charges after confronting another person about the homicide and shooting that person in the head and foot. Tyrus Winters is Kiwan Winters' father. Police also said Jordan R. Hogan, age 21, helped a suspect in the homicide avoid arrest. Hogan faces one count of obstructing prosecution. First-degree murder is a Class A felony, publishable by an automatic life sentence. Finally, summer school activities in June might be possible. Reynolds, the governor, says she'll allow it if data backs it. It's possible Iowa kids will be able to participate in summer school and activities as early as June, Governor Kim Reynolds said on Monday, adding that she will take those steps only if the data supports it. Iowa schools have been closed since mid-March, and Reynolds previously said she would announce by June 1 if and when summer sports activities and other school-sponsored events can resume. During a conference call with other governors who have started to reopen in their state's economies, Reynolds said sports activities in Iowa could resume in June. That could include school remediation programs that she thinks might be needed because schools have been closed. I think that's extremely important. But again, we need to do it in a responsible manner, Reynolds said. She also talked about the need to make sure child care is available, especially for our essential workforce and for Iowans that have had to stand on the front lines during the coronavirus. Reynolds made her comments during a Grading the Governor's virtual forum on Monday. And that does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Tuesday, May the 5th. I'm your reader, Ken Lauder. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website at iowaradioreading.org at any time. And thank you for listening.